Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring. Fight fans, to another edition here of the 2-Minute Round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. My name is Felipe Leon, and with, like always, every other Thursday here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, my co-host and my friend, David Avila.
Felipe, how you doing?
Good, David. So here we are on another edition of the 2-Minute Round where we're going to discuss all things boxing. We have a special edition this Thursday, since we're going to have Melissa St. Ville, the current super featherweight silver WBC champion, with us, where she's going to talk to us about some interesting goings on in her division. She was scheduled to fight this Saturday night in Finland against the champion Eva, her name is Eva? I can't pronounce that. Eva Wahlström. And all of a sudden, she's not fighting, and they do have a substitute fighter in Mayra Alejandra Gomez of Argentina. So Melissa St. Ville is going to come on in the next 15 minutes to talk to us about that, what happened, exactly what went down with that, and also about other things in her career. She actually is going to be on a special program on NBC, I believe, on the major network. So she, and that's not going to, it doesn't involve boxing, which is pretty interesting. So she'll hopefully talk to us about that. Maybe she can't tell us too much, since I don't think the episode has aired yet, but we will talk to her in about 15 minutes. Melissa St. Ville from New York City, originally from Haiti. But like always here on the 2-Minute Round, we are going to get started with the fight results for the last couple weeks. There was not that much action, but pretty important action in the world of female boxing, starting on Saturday, April 22nd, which was last Saturday, from Metepec, Mexico. Promociones del Pueblo on Televisa gave us the semifinals of the WBC Flyweight Diamond Tournament between Yvette La Roca Zamora, former, now at this point, WBC Junior Flyweight Champion, facing arch nemesis Esmeralda Moreno. This was the fourth fight that they have faced each other, and Esmeralda Moreno, for the second time, so now they're 2-2, pulls it off with the split decision in a 10-rounder with the scores of 96-93 and a very close 95-94 for Moreno, and then I believe it was a 96-93 for Zamora. David, you saw this fight. Tell me your thoughts about this fight, which, in my opinion, so far, it's right up there with the I mean, it's the best female fight of the year so far, but it could challenge any of the current nominations for male fight of the year.
Yeah, it was an intense battle. I mean, and they didn't waste time. I mean, immediately there was a knockdown in the first round with a pretty left hook and right cross, and it looked like it was just going to be domination by La Roca, and La Jolla Moreno came back, and it was a pretty brutal fight. I mean, there was very little defense. It was just punch, punch, punch. And they were landing, and in the end, what I saw was that Moreno kind of used she was a little more smarter with her punching than La Roca was.
Yeah, you could tell that Moreno wanted to actually box. She would start off every round, you know, with her jab. But Zamora, to her credit, she was able to, you know, get on the inside. I agree with you. There wasn't a lot of technical, you know, boxing here. It was an all-out war, punch after punch, more on the Zamora side, which forced her fight on Moreno. But regardless of that, Moreno was able to counterpunch very well with that right hand, and at the end ended up taking the fight with the split decision. And now she's the new WBC junior lightweight or junior flyweight. I'm sorry, flyweight champion. So there you have it. They're 2-2. They have faced each other before. Moreno had won one fight in the past, Zamora too. But now, you know, Zamora, who had asked to be part of this tournament ever from the onset of it, even though being the junior flyweight champion, now finds herself not only out of the tournament, but not a champion anymore, where Moreno, who's had a pretty good last 15 months, now is in the finals, and all she has to wait is for the winner of the current champion, Jessica La Kika Chavez, and Ana Arrazola, who are going to be facing each other on May 13th. And then I believe in June will be, or in July, I think they would give a little bit more time for Kika Chavez to get ready. We're going to see the finals of that tournament and determine who is the Diamond Champion. Now,
yeah,
moving on. Go ahead.
That was a interesting scoring by the judges. I actually agreed with the winning judges. And I have to give them credit because that was a hard fight to judge.
Very hard.
People are throwing blows back and forth. But mm-hmm. I thought Moreno landed the better punches.
Yeah, I think Zamora might have been busier and she might have thrown more punches. But I think, yeah, I agree with you that Moreno landed the harder punches and the better punches. So I agree with you on that one. The same night in Sweden, Mikaela Lawrence scored a unanimous decision over late sub Keita Watkins in a sixth rounder at 154 pounds. Scores there were 60-54 two times and 59-55. This fight came after Mikaela Lauren originally, she was going to face, who was she going to face, David? Do you remember the original one that she was going to face and then she ended up getting hurt?
I
forgot her name. So Mikaela Lauren was very upset that that fight fell through. And found another opponent, Keita Watkins. Her record wasn't all that great. She had lost her last, like, 10 fights or something like that. But, hey, when you're looking and you're against the wall there, you pretty much can take anybody that is willing to take the fight. And that was the issue. That was the case here with Keita Watkins. But, you know, she didn't get knocked out. She went the distance, the sixth rounder against a tough, you know, elite-level super welterweight in Mikaela Lauren. Mikaela Lauren has faced, you know, quite – pretty much everybody from 147 to 154. Would you think that a Mikaela Lauren at 160 would be a good fight against Clarissa Shields?
It would be good for Clarissa Shields, but it wouldn't be good for Mikaela Lauren. I think,
Do you think she
might get overrun.
Do you think that Mikaela Lauren would put on a better fight than Silvia Sabatos against Clarissa Shields?
I don't know. Silvia Sabatos has a pretty good chin.
Hmm. I mean, that's a fight that, thinking about it and just going over this last fight with Mikaela Lauren, that's not a fight that neither Lauren nor Clarissa Shields has mentioned. Mikaela Lauren, you know, not a big name in boxing. She is known to the hardcore female boxing fan. People know who she is. She's fought a number of fighters. She's fought Clara Svensson. She fought Cecilia Breakhouse. She's fought other names out there, but not a big name unless you know female boxing. But I think that she's willing to fight anybody in those three weight classes, 47, 54, and 160. So, you know, I agree with you. Maybe she doesn't beat Clarissa Shields, but I think it's a good name to have on Clarissa Shields' resume. A good fighter, a tall fighter with a good record, and it's a good name for Shields' resume. So maybe that's something that they could look into.
Yeah, it is a good matchup for Clarissa. It is for her.
On the same night at the Barclays Center, we saw on Showtime Extreme Amanda Serrano take on Diana Santana and scoring an eighth-round TKO to win the vacant WBO bantamweight title, making Amanda Serrano the first female to ever win five titles in five different divisions. The interesting thing about her is that she actually went from heavy to light instead of from light to heavy like traditionally in boxing. She started off winning the IBF super featherweight title back in 2011, And then she captured the WBO lightweight title in 2014. So she went from 130 to 135. And then she captured the WBO featherweight title last year. And also last year, late last year, she captured the super bantamweight title from the WBO. And now she has gone down the bantamweight. So five titles in five different divisions. First, let's talk about the fight. David, you saw it. I saw it. What did you think of Amanda Serrano's performance?
I think she's just getting better and better. I'm really amazed that despite the fact that I would think it would be very, very difficult to drop down in weight when you're used to fighting at a heavier weight, that she would get weaker and you wouldn't be able to have that snap or form. But she seems to get better and better. I mean, she's just more polished, more perfect timing. I mean, the thing she did against Santana, who was not standing still, she was moving the whole time. I was super impressed with her timing. Her timing was impeccable. And every time she got a chance to fire, she didn't just fire once. She'd fire two, three blows, and they would all land. And I was I would have to give her like almost a perfect score for her performance on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was very impressed with her performance. I think she looked much better. Not that she didn't look good against Jasmine Rivas in her first fight of the year in January on Showtime Extreme as well. But I think that Diana Santana allowed her to kind of show a little bit more of her style. She looked very well. I mean, she threw combination punches. I think that she could work a little bit more on closing off the ring. I think she was following or chasing Santana, who was moving a lot during the fight. But despite of that, she was able to score her combinations and her punches and basically dominated from the first bell to the ninth round when the fight was eighth round when the fight was stopped at the 114 minute of the round. So, you know, after that fight, I started thinking about it, and I think that she's in the top five pound for pound. I mean, I think in no particular order, but I think Cecilia Breakhouse is up there. Layla MacArthur obviously is up there. Amanda Serrano is up there. And then another woman who fought as well on Saturday night, which we're going to touch on. But I might ask you a little bit of a controversial question, David. You know, I commend her in this record that she has set. But in my eyes, and I want to get your opinion on it, I think it deserves an asterisk in the record book because she's winning these titles, but on some of them, she's not beating the champion. She's winning vacant titles on the majority of them. Of four out of five of these titles that she has won, there were vacant titles. And then she wins the vacant title, and two out of the five, obviously too soon to talk about bantamweight, but I don't know if she's going to stay at bantamweight. And she hasn't defended. So does this record deserve an asterisk in the history books in your eyes?
No, not really. Not in my eyes. Well, for one reason is that unlike most people, I really don't put a lot of credence in titles. I mean, they're good for ornaments in my eyes. But to me is the fact that she's willing to fight everybody and nobody wants to fight her. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're even offering good money and nobody wants to fight her. She went around the table and I'm getting this information from Lou DiBella and from Steven Espinoza of Showtime, and all they're giving me these names that they're offering good sized money to these girls, and these girls wanted more money even. Mm. And they wouldn't fight her. So she can only do what's offered in front of her. And what she's doing is she's mowing down the competition. And that's why I would have put an asterisk. I mean, that's one of those things that we'll see in time. You know, what happens when these girls with the names come and face her, and you know she gets to prove it. But I think that she's there already. She's at the top five, probably maybe even three or four.
I agree with you with the fact that she is looking to fight anybody and everybody. I mean, she, a lot of people I've seen on social media after she won this fight, and now a little bit of a sidebar, Diana Santana did not make weight. Actually, Amanda Serrano at her first attempt weighed in 118.2 and then came back and weighed in the 118, whereas Diana Santana weighed in 122, so she was 4 pounds overweight. So the title was only available to Amanda Serrano, and the purses, the reported purses for this fight were $12,000 for Amanda Serrano and $6,000 for Diana Santana, which was a lot less for the opponent than the last fight. The reported purse for the last fight against Jasmine Rivas, I think it was $15,000 each. So Serrano got a little bit less, and Diana Santana got a lot less than the previous opponent of Jasmine Rivas. But I agree with you. I think she's a great fighter. I think she's the best in the world, like I mentioned, one of the best in the world. But to me, it does deserve an asterisk. I mean, her first title, the IBF World Feather Super Featherweight title, it was vacant. She beat Kimberly Connor for it, did not defend it. Then she went after the WBO Lightweight title, who she did beat the champion in Maria Elena Maderna, did not defend it. Then she went after the vacant WBO Featherweight title against Olivia Guerrulla, who she knocked out in the first round. And then she did defend that against Calista Salgado. Then she went for the vacant WBO Super Bantamweight title, and then she won that. And then she did defend it against Jasmine Rivas. And now she has won another vacant title in the Bantamweight title for the WBO. And if you guys are followers of this show, you've heard my gripes with the WBO. It's the only of the four major organizations that does not have ratings. They don't have listed ratings. The WBC, the IBF, and the WBA do have female ratings, and you can see who's, you know, in those ratings. WBO does not list them. All they have is the world champions listed. So to me, I commend her on being a great fighter. She is a great fighter. I commend her that she's going after the major sanctioning body titles, mostly the WBO, even though she won the IBF, her first one. But I do believe that at this point, since she's winning vacant titles and not defending the majority of them, I believe that does deserve an asterisk. Now, also on Saturday night from Argentina, Jessica Tatuti Bob scored a ninth round TKO over Luna del Mar Torroba of Colombia in a 10 rounder, to defend her WBA junior flyweight title. This is her second or third fight after coming back from having a baby. And this turns out to be the 18th time that she defends this WBA junior flyweight title, which is something to be talked about. And this is the other woman that I think that deserves to be in the top five, pound for pound, because if you saw this fight, I'm sure you did, she's very mobile. She has great skills. Her footwork is great. Also combinations, very aggressive and very technical and very dominating. Although the most of the time that she has stepped into the ring, it has been against taller fighters, and that is something that does not faze her. She goes after them and beats them to the punch. And in the case of Luna del Mar, annihilated her. What did you think?
Oh yeah, I'm impressed with her. I mean, she's 33 years old. I mean, she's not 23 years old. She's 33. She looks like she's 23, and she's just a terror in the ring. And it's funny because outside of the ring, she doesn't look like a fighter. Doesn't seem like a fighter. She's just this happy-go-lucky kind of a person. But inside the ring, she's a terror. She's a terror.
Now, in the article that was posted, I believe after the fight, on theprizefighters.com by, what's the name of the gentleman that writes the articles out of Argentina?
Diego Murilla.
Diego Murilla, she did mention that she wants another crack at Jessica Chavez, which is the only loss that she has in her record of 31 wins, one loss. She came to Mexico in 2013 and lost the unanimous decision to Jessica La Kika Chavez, and she says she wants another crack at her. So we'll see if she gets that. I'm sure that she's going to push towards that fight being in Argentina. She's only been out of Argentina three times. actually four times. She fought Ibella Roca Zamora and defeated her in Uruguay back in 2009. And then she came to Mexico in 2012 and defeated Yesenia Martinez Castrejón. Her second fight, or the next fight after that one, she beat Marisol Miranda in Puerto Rico. And then two fights later, she came to Mexico and was defeated by Jessica Chavez. And then three fights ago, she went over to Venezuela and beat a Mexican, Nancy Franco, in Venezuela. So she tends to stay in her country. Why? Because she has a TV deal. She's on TNC Sports Network out there. She's very popular. She has no reason to come out of the country. She's been very successful. Actually, she's been out of the country one more time. In 2011, she went to Puerto Rico. But she's been very successful in luring outside fighters come to Argentina. She fought Jessica Chavez in Argentina, the aforementioned Roca Zamora, Ana Arrazola, Diana Gonzalez, Ana Arrazola again, Carino Moreno from the United States. She brought her down to Argentina. Castrejón went down to Argentina. Suzanne Warner faced her in Puerto Rico. Anabel Ortiz, the current WBA strawweight champion, went down to Argentina. Carolina Alvarez, who I believe is from Peru, went to Argentina. So she's faced a bunch of fighters. She makes enough money and is able to offer enough to have these women follow her to Argentina and face her there. So I believe that she would try to get Kika Chavez there. I think that if Kika Chavez ends up winning the tournament, which I think she has a good chance of doing it, even though she's going to be facing Moreno, who is on a good winning streak, and she did beat her in her last fight, which was last year, which was one of the better fights of the year last year. I think if Kika Chavez wins the tournament, there's really no reason to go down there. If Kika Chavez loses, then she might feel, to try to get a world title again, she might feel obligated to go down there. What do you think, David?
Well, according to Diego, Natuti Bop wants to fight in a neutral country. She doesn't. Mm. She understands the politics and the feelings of the fans. She wanted to fight in a neutral territory against Kika Chavez, or she wanted to fight against Germany's Susie Kentikian. And she talked about maybe fighting in North America. She likes what's going on over here with the television and stuff.
Okay, so I think with us now on the line, we have none other than WBC Silver Super Featherweight Champion, Melissa St. Ville. Melissa.
Hey, hey, hey. How you doing?
Hey, Melissa. Thank you for calling the 2-minute round all the way from New York City. And I'm going to pass the baton to David Avila. Go ahead, David.
Melissa, how are you?
Hey, I'm good.
So Melissa, we were talking earlier about the fact that you had a fight scheduled against Ewa Wallstrom, and then you got this information through another website that your fight had been canceled, that you had canceled it or pulled out. Why do you think they did that? And did they ever contact you whatsoever?
Yeah, that is so weird. That how can I cancel a fight that me and my team did have no clue about? You know what I'm saying? And as long as I've been boxing, everybody in the boxing world who knows me knows Melissa St. Ville never backs out or pulls out of a fight. But unfortunately here, I had no clue about this fight. I just one day, I was on my Facebook, and my mom sent me this thing in my inbox about me supposed to be fighting. And I'm like, oh, no, they might have the wrong Melissa, because I know there's Melissa Hernandez, there's Melissa Brown. And I'm not the only Melissa that's about to see my last name. And I'm like, where is they getting this false information from? So I had no clue about this fight.
Hello? I did contact the website that produced the story, and they informed me that it was from the promoter over there. And I don't know where they got their information, but promoters are promoters. They make up stuff.
Where did they get the info from? Because they had a poster, and I sent it to Luigi, and I'm like, where did this come from? So that's the crazy part, because I had no clue about this fight. So I just, you know, there's some ignorant person out there that's probably using my name, stirring up stories, but I'm here to tell the whole world that this information is false. And if there's anybody looking to book a fight with me, contact Luigi. He is the manager of Alicia Slick Ashley, Maurice Shea. He's not working with me. Contact him. Nobody else.
Oh, okay. There you go. So
yes.
So, but you still, I mean, you're the silver belt title owner, and nobody from
yes.
the WBC has contacted you whatsoever.
Yes, I am the champion, yes. So, hello?
We did try to contact the WBC, Mauricio Suleiman. We weren't able to reach him. We were told that he was in traveling mode right now, but we are going to contact him as soon as possible just to find out, you know, some of the details.
Because I just seen him. I seen Mauricio at the Golden Gloves a couple days ago. So this wasn't even brought up. I saw him in jail, and nothing was brought up. So that information is totally false.
Oh, that's good to know that your title wasn't at stake, because whether or not they have a fight, you have the title. They're going to have the fight, but you still have the title.
Oh.
So, Melissa, another question I wanted to ask you is, you were at the fight. Did you want to ask a question right now, Felipe?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, David.
Melissa, are you at the fight with Amanda Serrano and her fight against Ariana Santana? What did you think of the fight itself? How would you describe Amanda's win, and what does it mean for women's boxing in your mind?
Well, you know what's so funny? I did see the fight, and when I was leaving the fight, I ran into a girl that she fought from Dominican Republic. You know, I was just telling her, you know, good fight, you know. And she had told me that she hasn't fought in 4 years. She told me that she came down. She only had 3 weeks to train. And she told me that they stuck her in the sauna to lose the weight. And they said that Amanda's trainer had picked her up to bring her to the sauna. And I was like, you know, I was like, wow, you know, for her to go through all that and still fight, you know.
She showed that
she had a lot of heart.
She did fight. She fought last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, she did.
So she just told you all these things. Okay.
Yeah. She was saying, you know, how she couldn't make the weight. She only had 3 weeks to train and everything. And, you know, I was just saying, you know, well, I mean, you did go through all of that. You know, you put up a good fight.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of the fight itself, though? Regardless of what she was telling you, what did you think of the fight? What does it mean for women's boxing?
I think the fight was okay. The opponent looked out of shape, you know. I thought it was okay, but the opponent, she just looked run down.
Do you think it was because of Amanda's pressure, or she just, maybe she doesn't have it anymore?
No. I think the girl's condition, she didn't have no condition at all, her opponent. She looked, everything was, she was winging her punches, you know. The girl looked just tired and out of shape and winded. She looked like she wanted to quit a lot of times in the corner. I mean, that's just what
right?
I saw. Huh?
No, I said, is that right? So you were observing her between the rounds, too.
Yeah, I was looking at her in the corner. It looked like she really wanted to give up, you know, but she, you know, she gave a good fight, so I guess, I mean, I give her a plus for that.
So what does this, having females fights on TV, what does it mean to see that, to know that that's available now?
I think it's a wonderful thing because we should have been on TV a long time ago. So the fact that we are getting a chance to be on TV and letting the world see what we can do, I think is a wonderful thing because we should have been on TV. Like, what was the TV people waiting for? You know, every time you go to a boxing show and you see, like, a one female out on a box, everybody's waiting for the girls to come out. You know what I'm saying? The girls, we more excited than the guys. That's taking it from the male fighters. You know, so I'm off, you know, okay. Well, you know, the girls, you know, we come out there. We bring that excitement. We bring that. We just pop. So I feel like, you know, it's been our time to be on TV, and I'm happy that we finally had the opportunity. So it's a good look. I'm happy.
Yeah, you just recently fought. It ended in a technical decision. Were you kind of disappointed you weren't able to finish the fight?
Yeah, you know, it was weird because they ended up taking a point for me when the girl headbutted me, and she's taller than me, so that means she had to come down on me. Her, and you see where she got cut, it was way on the top. So they were saying that it's WBC rules and everything. So being that she had butted me and she was the one bleeding, they ended up taking a point for me. So, I mean, it's the rules, so I can't really be disappointed. I mean, I'm happy that I still hold my belt. So, I mean, it's boxing, so I didn't really let it bother me too much. I just found out that it was weird because she's the one that had butted me.
Oh, I see. What was it like fighting in Haiti again? Are you going to be fighting there again? After this?
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. It's always exciting to go back to Haiti and fight. You know, like I said, Haiti, you know, my family's from there. You know, before I used to live there, I was going there every summer. So Haiti is my second home. So, and I still have family and friends over there. So when I go to Haiti to fight, I'm always hyped and I'm excited. Because I am their first female champ. So it's a good feeling.
Felipe, did you want to ask her a question about the race, I think it was?
Yeah. Hi, Melissa. First of all, going back a little bit on the whole fight that did not happen, the one that you didn't know about this weekend. Now, Jill Diamond, who is an executive for female boxing for the WBC, is actually in New York. And you mentioned that you've seen Mauricio Sullivan at the Golden Gloves not too long ago. Have you tried to contact the WBC and see what kind of action can be taken against this promoter that was basically using your name and your image without your permission?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I spoke about it with Luigi, and he took care of it for me.
So what is going to turn out from that? Are they going to sanction the promoter, or what did Luigi tell you?
Friday to talk about everything. You know, I just mentioned it to him, so he says he's going to contact Mauricio and Jill Diamond. I know so far I went on Box Rec, and it's off my Box Rec because I had went on it, and I seen, when I found out about the article and I went on Box Rec, I seen they had my name and the girl's name up, but when I went back the other day, it was off, so...
She actually has a new opponent. They found an opponent. She's fighting somebody else. So that's who's on Box right now.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm a loyal Melissa Stainville Instagram follower. So I basically know everything that you're doing. So not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, you were posting about a Spartan race where Alicia asked
yes.
me. Yeah. Talk to us about that.
Yes. All right. So I did the Spartan race, which will be airing June 12th on NBC. I went to Atlanta to do it. My team is called the Sparring Spartans, and it was five of us. It was three MMA people and one bodybuilder, and it was a whole bunch of teams. So, you know, we just compete against each other. We do a whole bunch of obstacle courses and stuff. So it was really fun because it was, first of all, it was a challenge, and I just breezed through it, you know. So I'm really proud of myself that I went through this whole thing, you know, going through the mud and just climbing ropes, and, you know, I was just on my Rambo stuff. So it was really exciting. But you gotta, I can't say too much because I signed a contract with NBC, but you can see the rest on June 12th.
Now, Alicia Ashley, your good friend, who actually fought on the same card as you in Haiti not too long ago, she trained you for that. How long was the training, and how different was it from boxing training to get ready for this race?
You know what had me ready for the race was the conditioning. The conditioning has to be on 1,000. So my conditioning was already up there because I just came off the fight from Haiti. So the following week, I had to fly out to Atlanta and compete. So my conditioning was good, my strength. So that really carried me through the race. And I never trained for sparring. I didn't even know, you know, what to expect. I never did none of that stuff. None of that. When they had us in the holding room, you know, when it was our time to race, I was shadow boxing. I was really jump rope to shadow boxing, like I'm about to go to the ring. And man, I was climbing walls, going on flips, water slides, running through the mud, you know, jumping in the pool. It was crazy. It was crazy, and you know, it was competitive because I was going against two other teams. So, you know, I had that competitive attitude, you know, like I have in boxing and track and field when I used to run track. So that wasn't a problem, you know. I was going for the win, like, let's get this, let's go, you know. So it was good. I was ready.
Now you're working with Luigi, who you mentioned is Alicia Lashley's manager. He also manages Jennifer Hahn. He counsels Maureen Shea. She counsels Raquel Miller out here in the West Coast. So what's he telling you that is next for you? I mean, you're ranked number one by the WBC. You're the silver champion. The champion, Eva Wallstrom, is fighting this weekend. So is he telling you that it's a possibility that you could be fighting for the world title this year?
Yeah, you know, he told me that will be coming up, so, you know, I'm just staying ready and just staying prepared.
Do you have a next date right now? Do you have a fight date?
No, I don't have no dates at the moment. Like I said, I'm going to see him Friday, so we're going to sit down and talk about everything that's going on. So, not at the moment, but Friday I should know something.
Great. So hopefully you post it on your Instagram, because that way I'll be able to see who you're going to be facing.
Oh, you know I am, Dad. You know I do.
You got anything else, David?
No, just that I do look forward to seeing that race. So it's on June the 12th?
June 12th, NBC.
There you have it, fans. June 12th, NBC. It's called the Spartan Race.
The Spartan Race.
Yep, the Spartan Race. And I am on the sparring Spartan team.
How'd you get on that? Who contacted you for that? Or did you send an application? How did it happen?
All right, so this is what happened, right? So I was at home, and Alicia called me, Alicia Ashley. She said, you know, come to my house, let's do a video to do the Spartan Race. I said, okay, because, you know, I'm all about doing the videos. So I went to her house. And we did a video. So it's supposed to be me, Alicia Ashley, her husband, and two of his friends. So when I went to Haiti to go fight, my last fight in Haiti, the Spartan people contacted me and said the video did not make it, but we want you to be a part of the show. Well, if you're willing to still be a part of it, we're going to put you on another team. I said, okay. So I showed Alicia Ashley the email. You know, I told her, I said, what do you think about it? She's like, girl, it's an opportunity. Go for it. You know? So I sent them a video. Alicia Ashley We had to do a whole nother video in Haiti. The producer said, we know you're getting ready for a fight, but please just send us a quick video of your name, your fight in Haiti, and what makes you ready for a sponsoring. So we did all of that. I sent the video. The producer fell in love with me. He loved it. And they said, okay, we get back from Haiti. Email us. There's a date we'll find you in Atlanta, and you'll meet the rest of your team. And that's how I got on.
Wow, pretty interesting. All right, Melissa, well, thank you for joining us here on the 2-Minute Round. You're the, I think she's the
thank
only.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think, David, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she's the first guest that we've had on twice, right?
Hey.
Yeah, so first one. Thank you, Melissa. You're breaking records all over, not only on the Spartan Race, but in boxing, but with us as well. So we thank you, and we wish you luck, and hopefully we'll have you again on our show.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right,
thank
have
you,
a good
Melissa.
Night.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, there you have it, Melissa St. Ville, the WBC Silver Featherweight Champion, ranked number one by the WBC. And she explained to us how, you know, they were it's not the first time. David, you've been in boxing way longer than I have, and it's not the first time that they use the name and image of a fighter without that fighter even knowing about it. I'm pretty sure that before the whole internet and Facebook and when word will travel much slower, it would happen even more. You know, you could be here in the United States and they could probably be using your picture out in the Philippines and you wouldn't know it, right?
Exactly. I recall way back when they did that with Mia St. John, they had her image and she was supposed to fight. I think it was a Hollywood Palladium or something, and she had no knowledge of it.
Now, David, this past weekend, you were at the StubHub Center for Top Rank's independent pay-per-view card, which actually had a great fight between Oscar Valdez and Miguel Marriaga. But also in attendance, supporting her fellow Olympian Shakur Stevenson, was none other than two-time Olympic gold medalist and current NABF middleweight champion, Clarissa Shields. You got a chance to speak to her for a very short time. What was the conversation like?
Well, I had told her that I had spoke to her manager, co-manager, Mark Tappet, who is formerly the head of HBO and now manages Clarissa Shields. He had told me that they were setting up a fight for the summer. And so I asked her if she had any idea where she might be fighting. And she told me on Saturday that at the moment it looked like she would be fighting her next fight, her title defense in Detroit. But there was a number of names on the list. Nobody knew the exact name. I think most importantly, they were trying to set up a TV date.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark Taffet just yesterday tweeted, and I'm going to quote, Mark Taffet, former HBO pay-per-view chief and now president of Mark Taffet Media and manager of Clarissa Shields, he tweeted yesterday, and I quote, boxing knocking it out of the park in April, May, and June, one great fight after another, and Clarissa Shields will be in that mix. Stay tuned. So maybe we'll get to see her in the next 2 or 3 months. But also another interesting thing. Go ahead.
Good point.
Yeah. Now, another interesting thing that happened that night, and I'm not sure if you're too familiar with it, but she actually had a little bit of a face-to-face, and they actually posed face-to-face with none other than Marisela Cornejo. Were you around when that happened, or were you on the other side of the...
Yes, I was.
You were there?
So, yes, I was there. In fact, I just stood out to the side. I don't want to photobomb them.
So how was that exchange between them? I mean, I know that these two women have, you know, both of them have huge presence on social media. I mean, they have a lot of followers on Instagram and on Facebook and things like that. And neither one of them are too shy to, you know, kind of mix it up during in social media. Marisela Cornejo has had a very publicized beef with Oakland's Raquel Miller. They actually saw each other face-to-face in Vegas. I think it was on the fight between Sergey Kovalev and Andre Ward, and it was filmed when they were kind of going back and forth of who had said what, who was ducking who, and blah, blah, blah. And now Clarissa Shields and Maricela Cornejo have actually had kind of the same kind of conversation on Twitter and on Instagram and Facebook. So how was that exchange between them there at the StubHub?
Well, it was interesting because I'll give you the introductory form. What happened is that I was sitting in my seat. The fight had just ended. I see a crowd gathering, and quickly, I mean, it went from 10 to 20 to 30 to 100. And I looked, and I could spot Maricela because she's kind of tall, especially with heels. And so I said, oh, she's over there. And then I saw Clarissa. And so then I started my way over there, and I passed a few fighters who told me hi, and they said, where are you going so fast, Dave? I said, I'm going to go check out the girls. And they go, what girls? They said, and I said, Clarissa and Maricela, and they all came with me. So everybody was interested in the meeting of the two middleweight contenders. And it was amiable. They talked to each other. They posed. And they're very professional, but there is a rivalry, and they both know they're going to be fighting each other pretty soon.
You know, and that's interesting because Clarissa Shields, I mean, we've talked about it here on the show before. She has no qualms in expressing herself exactly, very truthfully, and exactly what's on her mind on social media and on interviews and things like that. She's actually gotten into a little bit of beefs recently with some boxing writers and with some comments regarding Sergey Kovalev and his disdain for women's boxing. She's a big supporter of Andre Ward. Obviously, Shakur Stevenson is a client of Andre Ward. Andre Ward is his co-manager along with James Prince. And Clarissa is very good friends with Shakur Stevenson. But I seen a little bit of a change from her from one interview to the next because when she first went pro, I saw an interview where the interviewer was actually mentioning some names like Raquel Miller and Maricela Cornejo. And she's like, who are these people? Like, why are you even mentioning these names to me? I mean, obviously she knows who they are. She's very familiar with Raquel Miller. They were sparring partners during the 2012 Olympics. But she was kind of like making them seem like they weren't at her level. And now I saw an interview actually from that night from the StubHub Center on Saturday night. And even though she's not giving Maricela Cornejo too much credit, she actually has come to terms that it's a name that she's going to have to face in the future. And she knows it's going to happen, and she's open to it. And why wouldn't she? You know, it's going to be money in her pocket. And, you know, in my opinion, and I'm sure in yours, it's going to be another win for her in the win column. So I think I don't know if her team has had conversations with her or she's coming or she's learning the way the game is played here in boxing. But I've seen that in some of the interviews that I've seen of her recently. Have you noticed that, David?
Yeah, she's very intelligent. That's one thing that people don't understand. Even though she's very young, she just turned 22. She's very young. She's very young, but she's super intelligent. She picks up quickly. She's understanding what she needs to do. And she has, of course, one of the best managers, co-managers in the business, and Mark Tappet and company. So she's being groomed to be the queen. And she's beginning to learn what things to say, what things not to say, what makes big fights. It's not necessarily skill, and that's all. But there's also personality, and there's also status, and there's also fans.
Now, one thing that we've learned this past week, not only with this conversation, but there might be a little bit of an obstacle. I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, and that's why I'm going to talk to you about it. But in a recent interview that I conducted with Oscar De La Hoya and that we posted on the prizefighters.com and the whole thoughts between Oscar and Eric Gomez of Golden Boy and jumping into female boxing, which is one of the bigger stories in female boxing of this year, 2017, with Marlene Esparza, and the fact that Eric Gomez and Oscar De La Hoya are open to working with other women, is that in that interview that I conducted with Oscar, he mentions quite clearly that the one fighter that he's very interested in working with is Clarissa Shields. Okay?
Yes.
Now, Clarissa Shields has the world is her oyster. I mean, she's a two-time gold medalist. She got paid in her pro debut more than Shakur Stevenson. She got paid $50,000. Shakur Stevenson got $20,000. So money is starting to not become an issue for her, where if you watch the documentary T-Rex about her and her first run at the Olympics, money was an issue at that time with her and her family. Now, hopefully, it's not. You know, she basically has an exclusive deal with Showtime. I mean, Steven Espinosa, we've had him here on the show, and he's huge on her. And she's done all this without a promoter. Like you mentioned, she has a very intelligent and very influential co-manager, Mark Taffet. So she may not need a promoter at this point. And second, you know, if she didn't need a promoter, she could pick whoever she wants. There's no promoter out there, maybe just Bob Arum, but even he might think about it twice, that if she went up to him and said, hey, I want you to promote me, all of them would say yes, right?
I think Bob Arum
would say yes, too. And Bob Arum hasn't promoted a female boxing match since the 90s, probably.
Well, actually, since Anna Julitin fought.
Yeah, that was like back in like what, mid-2000s?
Yeah, like 2008, something like that.
But let's just say that Golden Boy offers her a killer deal. She takes it. And Marisela Cornejo is it official now who she signed with?
Yes, she's a Ring Star.
She's with Ring Star Promotions or Ring Star Sports, whose leader is none other than Rinsha Schaefer, who is person non grata at any Golden Boy event. So if that were to happen, if Cornejo is with Ring Star and Shields goes with Golden Boy, that fight's not happening.
I don't know. I don't really know if that's the case anymore. I think it's all about TV. You got a TV deal, and I don't think it'll stop it. It's not like with Al Haymon. That's a whole different scenario.
Because now that we're talking about it more, that really puts an obstacle there, because Golden Boy hasn't worked with Showtime in quite a while, and she has an agreement with Showtime. She has, you know, she's being treated very well by Showtime. So I don't know if Clarissa Shields could be that bridge if she were to sign with Golden Boy, and if Oscar De La Hoya, with his charm and obviously with a very good financial package, would convince Clarissa Shields to sign with him, and then maybe she would be the bridge for Showtime and Golden Boy to start a conversation again. Or you know, here's another thing, David. I mean, Showtime is great, but you find ESPN, you're in more homes.
True, or there's even one more scenario. Maybe she's the one that opens up the door for HBO.
That's another thing, too, you know, and why wouldn't they? I mean, HBO loves a good story. She has a great story. HBO likes to feature the best fighters, who they believe are the best fighters in the business, which they most of the time do. And she is one of the best fighters in the business. And throughout HBO's history, they've always put a large emphasis on the Olympics and the fighters that have come out of the Olympics. And they have tried to go after those guys. Case in point, Andre Ward, Sugar Ray Leonard, I'm sure, was featured on HBO plenty of times. Oscar De La Hoya, Gennady Golovkin, Vasyl Lomachenko, Guillermo Rigondeaux, and her being the only male or female U.S. boxer to ever win two gold medals means something,
yeah.
I think, to HBO. Now, is it enough for them to actually jump into the female boxing world? It might be. You know, they see Showtime doing it, and Showtime's been very successful, so it might be. So there's a lot of different scenarios here. I mean, I don't know if Golden Boy would be the right fit for Clarissa Shields, but I don't know what other promoter would be. You know, I mean, obviously, if Heyman or anybody else was interested in her, they would have made a run for her already, or maybe they have. And Mark Taffin feels that they don't really need to sign with anybody just yet. I don't even see why they would.
That's a good point. But, I mean, if it actually comes down to it, I mean, she's actually in a position of power, especially with Mark Taffin. Maybe there's something going on right now. Maybe they're negotiating between different factions. And because we haven't heard everything. It's always just been little pieces here and there. And here's another fight, and here's another fight. But maybe they're negotiating some kind of deal. We don't know. I guess our job is to find out.
Yeah, but why would you even sign with a promoter at this point as far as her? Like, I agree with you 100%. She's in a position of power. I mean, what does a promoter do for you? They promote you, and they help you get what you want. What does a fighter want? They want world titles, and they want to be on TV. She doesn't have a world title yet, but she has a title, the NABF title. And she's been on TV, so why does she need a promoter?
Yeah, it's kind of like the scenario we have with Mikey Garcia. He's not signed with a promoter, but he has a contract with Showtime. And he doesn't need a promoter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, there, obviously there is a promoter on record for that show in Detroit, but I mean, let me research it real quick. It might even be a local promoter. I mean, the money's coming in from Showtime for her purse. So, you know, let me see who the promoter was. It was Turner Boxing Promotions, Dennis Turner, and Salida Promotions from the former fighter. I know, actually. The promoter on record was Dimitri Salida of Salida Promotions, former fighter Dimitri Salida.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he had nothing to do with her fight. I mean, that was completely done by Showtime, by Mark Taffin, and her purse and Sabato's purse was paid by Showtime. And basically, he just put up the ring and paid the referee, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And he got fans coming to his show.
He sold it out. So there you go. So, I mean, there's a couple different scenarios for Clarissa Shields, and it's very exciting to be in this position in female boxing and find out what's going to happen, because every time something happens this year in 2017, it's somewhat of a precedent. You know, it's the first time in a long time, and it sets kind of like a blueprint of what could come next, not only this year, but in years to come. So for a long time, at least in the United States, it's a pretty exciting year here, 2017, in female boxing.
Oh, yes. The whole world is aware of it, too. Not just the United States. I mean, every country that has women's boxing, they have their eye on the United States, because they know that's where everybody wants to fight there. And now that they have TV and bigger money, everybody has their eyes in the United States.
Yes, yes. So moving on to our female fight chatter, I found some interesting stories and I shared them with you, David. Hopefully you got a chance to peek at them a little bit. I thought it was pretty interesting. Speaking of Clarissa Shields, her opponent in her first pro debut, in her first fight as a professional, Franchon Cruz, it was a good story on ESPN, which was kind of, you know, it was nice to see this kind of story on ESPN, and it wasn't only focusing on Clarissa Shields and Marlene Esparza and Amanda Serrano, the bigger names in the female fight world here in the United States, but on Franchon Cruz, who is 1-1 now. She has bounced back from that first loss to Clarissa Shields, but it was a nice story between her and fellow amateur standout Glenn DeZurn, who is now her husband. They met in the amateurs and ended up getting married. And it was a nice story because it kind of explains how they help each other out in their careers. They actually spar each other, and they talk about that. And Cruz is actually bigger. She's a middleweight, where he's a super featherweight. Did you get a chance to read that story?
No, I didn't. I didn't. But
yeah.
I am interested in seeing it.
Yeah, yeah. Check it out when you get a chance. And if our listeners have not gotten a chance, go on ESPN.com, obviously in the boxing section, and scroll down and you'll see it. It's a really interesting story. Also, on ESPN, in the website, the State Athletic Commission in New Jersey has announced that it will now sanction three-minute rounds for professional women's boxing. They're going to give the option. So it's not going to be across the board that now if you're a female fighter and you fight in New Jersey, that you're going to fight three-minute rounds. But it's going to be an option that they're going to offer the promoters. Now, this past week, the WBC came out pretty strong. Well, actually, it was last week when we had our show. Came out pretty strong in their defending their argument of why female boxing should stay with two-minute rounds and 10 rounds as a limit for a world title fight. And obviously, like anything now in our society, it gets discussed that the public opinion, the state of public opinion, or it's Facebook and it's social media. That's where everybody goes and discusses everything. And people were discussing, and let me ask you this, David, I don't understand this argument. I'm still on the fence. I haven't decided if I'm for 2 minutes or 3 minutes, quite honestly. I know you've defended it as well as our co-host, Elena Baby Doll Reed, who hopefully returns soon after going. She's dealing with some work and family commitments that she has. No problems, just commitments. She's a very stern follower, a staunch supporter of the three-minute round. You are somewhat as well. I play devil's advocate and kind of given the two-minute round side of it. I'm still on the fence, but the argument that I don't understand that some women, some female fighters have made on social media while they're discussing this point is that they feel that they're going to get paid more if they fight three-minute rounds. I don't understand that, because who's to say that a promoter is going to say, you know, you're going to fight 3 minutes, so I'm going to pay you more. This is not like a regular job where you punch a clock and you get paid more because you fight more. You know, it's what the promoter feels that your fight is worth, whether it's 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And I don't understand the argument of because the fight's a three-minute round fight instead of a two-minute right around, they're going to get paid more. Do you know of a different angle that I'm not seeing?
No, it's just some people's point of view. They think it should be paid more. I don't understand it. To me, it actually, the 3 minute benefits a fighter in that it turns it from a brawl into skill. That's why I like 3 minute rounds.
Yes. And we discussed that before here on the show where you have brought up the point that with 3 minutes, you know, the female fighters would have more time to develop a fight, you know, and to, quite honestly, punish their opponent or maybe set up punches better to the point where they could score more knockouts, you know, and that's a good argument, yes. And I agree with that, you know. Whereas with the 2 minutes, you know, they don't get enough time. Now, the counter argument to that is that since you only have 2 minutes, you got to work faster and you got to throw more punches. And you got to bring the fight sooner to be able to win the round. And therefore, you see more action in 2 minutes than 3 minutes. So that's a counter argument to that argument of providing more time so you could develop more of a fight. But I see your point. It would result in more skill. But I agree with that. You know, I also agree with the fact that it's more of a human right issue or more of a
right.
Equality issue. I don't see that women, although we call her the weaker sex or the fairer sex or whatever, they go through labor. And I never seen labor live. I've seen it on TV or whatever, and that thing looks like it's horrible, and I would never want to go through that. So if they could go through that, I don't think there's anything that could happen in the ring to them that could equal to what they go through with labor. So that, to me, is a good argument that, hey, we just want to be equal. We're women, you know, and they're men, but we feel that we could compete the same amount of time, 3 minutes, every, you know, it's equal rights, and I agree with that. I agree with that argument, and that's why I'm on the fence one way or the other. Now, I've been at both conventions, the both WBC all-female conventions, and during the conventions, they've had talks by doctors, and they've done seminars where they show, medical research to argue for the two-minute rounds that women are more susceptible to concussions, and that perhaps their conditioning that prevents head trauma and concussions is not at the level of males. And that is a good argument
right.
as well.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different points. And like I was just saying 5 minutes ago, where it's getting really exciting in female boxing this year, because this argument and just like anything, like politics or anything else, you got your hardliners on one side and your other hardliners on the other side. Some of them active fighters, some of them, you know, part of the organization. And then you got the people in the middle who, like me, are on the fence or you know, like you, David, who are very open to it. You're saying that you do support three-minute rounds, but also see the points that the two-minute round camp are making. So it's getting very interesting, and I'm excited to see where this whole conversation goes and gets to.
Yeah, it is an interesting point, especially in fact that female MMA fighters, it's like 5 minutes. So
mm-hmm.
what's the argument to that?
Yeah, and originally, yeah. Now, originally they didn't fight 5 minutes, and then they did get equality, and they ended up getting 5 minutes. Now, the argument for that is that MMA fighters, even the men fighters, and I'm not a big follower, but I watch MMA fights, is that, first of all, they're not getting, I mean, they are getting kicked in the head, and sometimes they get a forearm and stuff like that, but it's not as constant as boxing. You know, I'm sure that if you counted, you had a punch count for MMA and for boxing, whereas even you counted a kick to the head or a punch or a forearm or whatever, I don't think it would be as high as boxing, where you're continuously getting punched in the head, you know? So there might be the difference where with, you know, you get a lot. I mean, there might be a fight in MMA that they don't get punched at all because they're on the ground the whole time, you know?
True.
So there's an argument there that, yeah, you know, MMA went to 5 minutes, but they're not getting bashed in the head 200, 300 times in a 15, 20, 25 minute span, you know?
True.
Now, Nicola Adams, who just made her pro debut a couple weeks ago in the UK, will be fighting in her next fight in her hometown of Leeds in a four-round, three-minute fight, which is legal in the UK. So her first fight, her pro debut a couple weeks ago, was a two-minute round fight, but her next fight is going to be 3 minutes. So the UK moving in the right direction. Now, one thing that they do in the UK that they don't do in the United States, or pretty much in the rest of the female boxing world, is that in the UK, all female fights, no matter what size, how much they weigh, from straw weight or atom weight to heavyweight, they all use 10-ounce gloves. Whereas everywhere else in the world, in female boxing, Mexico, United States, Argentina, Germany, everywhere else, they follow the men who, from welterweight under, it's 8 ounces. Welterweight up, it's 10 ounces. So Nicola Adams recently stated, and I'm going to quote, she said, "Female boxing has come a long way since Jane Couch, MBE, made that the sport possible here in the UK in 1998. However, there is still a way to go until both male and female boxers can campaign under the same competition rules. Fighters and fans want these changes to happen, and it will make the fights more entertaining. It was really frustrating in my first professional fight, as every time I felt I was getting close to a stoppage, the bell would go for the end of the round. It's great that
right.
the BBB of C, which is the sanctioning commission of the UK,
mm-hmm.
has supported this first change, and hopefully changes to glove sizes would come next." So there she is arguing towards your point that she needed more time to try to knock her opponent out. She was not able to, and she went the 4-round decision. Now, when, because I didn't know this actually about the 10 rounds that you knew about it, you decided not to share that information with me,
oh,
so
no,
I had to find out.
Oh,
you didn't know? Okay, well, I thought you said you did.
No, I didn't know.
Oh, so now we both know. Now, what I find interesting about that is that how devastating Katie Taylor actually is, because she's using 10-ounce gloves and she's beating the crap out of every one of her opponents.
Yeah, she has a tough fight this week.
Yeah, she has a tough fight, and we're going to get to that. But lastly, here in the Fight Chatter, in the TMZ section of the week, and like I just mentioned it last week, NABF middleweight champion Clarissa Shields had a little bit of a Twitter beef with some writers and fans regarding her comments about Sergey Kovalev, who she states keeps insulting female boxing. So she made some comments. Some people accused her of having double standards because she's a they accuse her of having double standards, and she's a big Andre Ward supporter. Sergey Kovalev said some things about female boxing that she didn't agree with. I agree with her on that point, but there's other things that you know, she said. And basically, I just saw a tweet from her yesterday that she said, you know what, I'm done responding to people here. You know, if you're going to come at me, I'm just going to block you. So, like you said earlier, She's learning. She's young. She's starting to see how things get done, not only in the boxing world, but just being on the public eye with people following her. I mean, she has a lot of followers, and people are interested in what she has to say and what she has and she does. And it might be tough on a 19, 20, 21-year-old who, despite boxing being pretty much all her life, it's not really all her life. She has, you know, I'm sure she has a boyfriend and, you know, she has friends and she has this and this and that and that. And she might want to share that as well on her social media. And people are taking it, you know, a certain way, or maybe she's feeling a little bit of pressure. So, you know, hopefully it's a learning process for her, because like many people have said, not only fans and writers, but also other fighters have said that Clarissa Shields is, you know, the next big thing in female boxing.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to our upcoming calendar, which unfortunately is as light as our last one, but there are some important fights coming up on Saturday, April 29th, which is this Saturday. Nana Yoshikawa of Japan, and she will be fighting in Osaka, Japan, will be defending her WBO flyweight title in a 10-rounder against Mexican Montserrat Raya Alarcón. Alarcón is already in Japan. The only thing here is that Alarcón naturally is a strawweight, so she's actually moving up two divisions to challenge for the WBO flyweight title. She's going for the opportunity. Is she going to be able to do something? Who knows? She's very experienced. She has some experience. Nana Yoshikawa doesn't have a lot of fights under her belt. I think she has around 10, if not a little bit less and a little bit more, but she is the flyweight champion.
She's 38 years old.
38 years old. So, you know, if Montserrat Alarcón brings it, and you got to bring it to Japan, doesn't matter if you're male or female, to win in Japan, you got to bring it. We might be seeing a new WBO flyweight champion. Now, if Alarcón does do it, it puts her in a great position, because at least to make a pretty good purse, because she's going to bring that belt back. And there's one female fighter in Mexico that really, really wants that belt, and that is Arely Muncino. Because Muncino has won every flyweight title but the WBO title. She has been an IBF champion. She's been a WBC champion. She's been a WBA champion. And the only title that she needs to win to, you know, hit for the the other one, when you hit the single, the double, the triple, and the home run.
Oh, okay.
You don't know what that's called in baseball. The cycle.
To hit for the cycle
is to win this WBO title. So if Montserrat Alarcón is able to pull it off in Japan this Saturday night and brings that title home, Monsignor, who is promoted by Stanford, is going to be all over her and is going to practically offer anything that she can so they can fight for that title. So Alarcón really has to make that push. Also, on Saturday, April 29th, in Chihuahua, and this fight is going to be featured on Azteca Channel in Mexico, Irma Garcia, who is a federal policewoman, will be facing the tough Judith Rodriguez in a 10-rounder at bantamweight. And the same night, April 29th, from the O2 Arena in London, England, my favorite prospect, Katie Taylor, will be facing a fellow undefeated fighter, Nina Menke, in a 10-rounder in the lightweight division. Do you know why they're fighting in the 10-rounder?
No, I didn't find any information on what they're fighting for, unless it's the EBU title, which is a European belt. But Nina is undefeated. She's from Germany, and she's fought some pretty decent girls.
Yeah, I think I had saw somewhere that it was going to be for some kind of title, but I haven't seen it announced or reported by anybody what title that is. So hopefully we get to see it. Hopefully they stream it. Obviously, it's not going to be featured on the Showtime broadcast. Showtime will be broadcasting the main event from the O2 Arena, which is obviously Anthony Joshua against Vladimir Klitschko, that big heavyweight fight. Now, one thing that I did notice is, you know, being in the media, we receive, and I'm not sure if you noticed this as well, David, but we receive, you know, press releases and things like that. And they released a press release where they announced they had a public workout yesterday, I think at the O2 Arena, where I think there was like 40,000 people there just to see these guys work out in front of the cameras, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, they go in order starting from like 2 p.m. because in England, it's practically like Mexico where they have like 20 fights on the same card. And they start from the bottom, you know, at 2 o'clock, 2:30, 3 o'clock, blah, blah, blah. So obviously the last guy that was going to work out in front of the public was going to be Anthony Joshua. The right before him was going to be Vladimir Klitschko, which are going to be in the main event. The one right before Vladimir Klitschko, Katie Taylor.
She's big.
So I found that very interesting. Now, as we all know, there's going to be 90,000 people at the O2 Arena. If they put Katie Taylor right before the Klitschko, no, she's not going to be the semi-main event. Could she be the semi-main event?
I would think so. I wouldn't doubt it.
Wow, if she's the semi-main event? If she's the semi-main event, I mean, this is bigger than anything that's ever. This is bigger than even Barbie Juarez fighting at the Zocalo in Mexico City. You know, it might be close because Scott Quigg's on the card. You know, ex-world champion. Is he bigger than Katie Taylor? No. Luke Campbell, lightweight, on the card. Is he bigger than Katie Taylor? I don't think so. So she very well may be the semi-main event. If that happens, wow, that's big.
Yeah. She's a legend.
Yeah. Also, on Sam's Town in Las Vegas, and our very own David Avila is going to be in the house. Layla MacArthur, our guest, last couple weeks, will be facing a late sub. Originally, she had stated here on our airwaves that she was going to fight for the fifth time in her career, Melissa Huracan Hernandez. But that fight has gone through the wayside. David, did you find out why she ended up not fighting Hernandez?
Yes, Melissa got hurt, so they had to scour around for another opponent, and they found Hungary's Silvia Ceballos, who just fought last week and knocked out her opponent.
And Silvia Ceballos is best known for, you know, fighting Clarissa Shields back on March 10th, where she lost for the NABF title. Put up a good effort, but she lost against Clarissa Shields, and now she's going to be facing Lena MacArthur in a weight class at welterweight, which I think is a little bit closer to what she's used to versus middleweight, where she fought Clarissa Shields. Also on the same card, although an opponent has not been named yet, and hopefully she gets one, because I really want you to see her with your own eyes and then tell me how she looked. LaTondra Jones, a super welterweight, is also scheduled to be on that card, and Jones is actually the first female fighter to be signed by Mayweather Promotions.
Yes, I did meet her. I haven't seen her fight yet, but I did meet her at the Pechanga a couple of months ago when Mayweather Promotions had their card.
Okay, and on May 6th from Finland, the fight that we spoke to Melissa St. Ville about, Eva Wallstrom, the WBC Super Featherweight Champion, will be facing Argentina's Mayra Alejandra Gomez in a 10-rounder. This Mayra Alejandra Gomez is a tough fighter. I've seen her fight live when she fought here in Tijuana, well, Rosarito, in 2015 against Jackie Nava. She's actually a naturally bantamweight, because one of the storylines when she fought Jackie Nava is that she was going up to super bantamweight to face Jackie Nava, and now she's going all the way up to 130 pounds to challenge Eva Wallstrom for the title. So that's pretty much all you need to know about that. And also on May 6th, from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, it was just announced today by a press release, although we kind of broke the story on the PrizeFighters.com with the story that we wrote with Eric Gomez and about Golden Boy. He actually told us before it was announced by them officially today in a press release that Marlene Esparza is going to be part of the big Saul Canelo Alvarez against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. pay-per-view. Well, she's going to be on the card. She's not going to be on pay-per-view. She's not going to be televised. They might televise. I'm not sure if they're going to televise it through ringtv.com or something of the sort. They are. So Marlene Esparza is going to be featured in a four-round flyweight fight. And she's going to be facing Dallas Samantha Salazar, who has a record of 2 wins, 3 losses, 1 draw. She went pro in 2015, and she actually had a no contest against Ashley Jamila King. Then she faced Shureta Metcalf, beat her via unanimous decision. And then she lost her next two fights against Rosalinda Rodriguez, who is the current NABF bantamweight champion. She lost to Cristina Fuentes, who was a lot more experienced than her. She's got stopped by Fuentes. Then she fought to a draw against Casey Morton, a guest of the show. And then she fought Cristina Fuentes again, got beat by her again. And then she's coming off a win against Mystery Neal. So she's 2 wins, 3 losses, 1 draw, no knockouts, and she's been stopped one time. She's 31 years old. Marlene Esparza is about 27, 28. So a little bit better opponent than her last one in Rachel Sassoff. Another thing that was also reported in that press release today by Golden Boy Promotions is that she will be fighting a 3-minute round in Las Vegas. So that is something new. Now, in that press release, Golden Boy erroneously stated that she was the first woman ever to fight a 3-minute round, ever to fight a 3-minute round, which now everybody in the female fight world has jumped all over them through social media and saying that there's no way in hell that she's the first female to ever fight a 3-minute round. So hopefully Golden Boy kind of starts doing a little bit more research before they send out a press release with a claim that obviously is not true.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Layla MacArthur, who we had here on our last show, fought 3-minute rounds. Martha Salazar, who we had a couple weeks ago.
It was actually a title fight.
Yeah, a title fight and a 12-rounder, right?
Yeah, it was a 12-round title fight for the WBA.
Yeah, 3-minute round. Layla MacArthur did that in the United States. Martha Salazar, I think in Vegas, also fought a 3-minute round. A good number of female fighters have come up on social media saying that claim is obviously not true, that they have fought 3-minute rounds in the United States. So hopefully Golden Boy either sends out a correction or just basically doesn't say that ever again.
So with that said,
we have come to the end of the 26th edition of the 2-Minute Round, your hooks and jazz look at the female fight world here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. We'd like to remind you that if you want to support the Leave It in the Ring Network so we can keep bringing you this show and the next round on Monday nights with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya and the Leave It in the Ring flagship show on Wednesdays at 6:30 with our fearless leader, David Duenas, you can do so by pledging at patreon.com/leaveitintheRing. Our next show is scheduled for May 11th, where we're going to be talking about all the upcoming fights that we just mentioned. David's going to be in the house in Vegas this Saturday night to watch Layla MacArthur face Silvia Ceballos and hopefully Latondra Jones as well. Whereas both of us, David Avila and myself, Felipe León, will be in the house in Vegas on May 6th to see Marlene Esparza.
Yes.
Well, not only her, but see the rest of the card. So we will be bringing you a first-eye look and you know, not on TV, but actually there at the house, what we saw and who we talked to those two nights on our next show, May 11th. David, good night. Please say good night.
Good night, Felipe. Good night, everybody.
Good night, David. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, Ben, here.